She is super cute, but she wants to lie on my keyboard like all cats.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are recapping our OmegaCon 2025 experience. It's an opportunity to tell you about some new games we played, which ones we liked, which ones we didn't. Hopefully it helps you pick some for yourself.
We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
That's me, I'm the girl.
And Tim Wick.
I'm not a girl. I'm just trying to stop a kitten from lying down on my keyboard.
I'm just a man trying to stop a kitten from climbing on his keyboard.
The kitten is so pervasive.
Standing in front of a kitten.
Persistent.
Begging it not to be on the keyboard. Hey, folks. We just were at OmegaCon.
Yay.
Fall edition 2025. Normally, we record an episode at OmegaCon and we talk about some of the games we played over the weekend. This year, we decided to do it a little bit different and record afterwards. So we all took notes and kept track of the games we were playing, and we want to talk to you about how we spent our Slackful weekend, mostly about playing board games.
Mostly.
But not exclusively.
That's right, because we're complicated people.
Unless you think a card game where it lays out, you know, some people think that counts as a board game.
Hobby market games.
Oh, tabletop games.
Tabletop games. I like to bring a stack of comics and catch up on my reading at OmegaCon, too. So I did that as well. Tim, what's a game you played this weekend?
That's a great question. I played a lot of games with you two, so I'm going to talk about one that I played not with you two, although I imagine you probably played it, too. It was called Spots.
I didn't play that.
Okay, it's a dice game where you have dogs that have spots on them that are the number of pips on a six-sided die. Okay. So maybe maybe a dog has a 1, 5, and a 4 on it. And then there are several tricks that you can have your dog do. Every game you get 6 tricks, and there's 30 or 40 different tricks in the game. So every game is a little bit different based on the different tricks that you can do. Like one might be just roll 3 dice and do with those 3 dice what you can do with those 3 dice. And others can be more complicated because you've got the numbers that are on your dogs. And then you also have the backyard where you can bury up to 7 pips worth of dice. So any number of dice. It could be 7 dice with a 1 on it, or it could be a 5 and a 2. The minute you go over 7, you bust and you lose all of your dice. So if you haven't completed a dog by filling in all the pips on the dog, then you lose the dice on that dog and you have to start over. So there are different mechanics. Like one trick allowed you to roll 2 dice plus one of the dice that's in your backyard. So now you have 3 dice and one of them is the die in your backyard. And if you're sitting on a 6 in your backyard, well, you're going to bust really easily. And now maybe you can either fill in a dog or get a much lower number into your backyard and bury it in your backyard. So really simple to learn. You could talk people through how to play it in maybe 5 minutes. A game took not even 30 minutes. It was just a good game. Spots. SPOTS.
It's by CMYK, a game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they make a lot of fun stuff.
It sounds kind of like a Farkle push your luck kind of a game.
A little bit.
Yeah, that's great.
And it does have a mechanic for re-rolling as well. So sometimes you're like, oh, this is a terrible roll, but I have a treat and I can pay this treat in and I can re-roll and maybe it won't be as bad. So
that's CMYK is who did another game we played this weekend. I was just thinking that. And then they did like Mind Wave or something too.
Wavelength,
yep. That's it.
Yep.
They made a game that we played this weekend for the first time, sort of. We bought the new edition of Magical Athlete. I think the original Magical Athlete, I think, is a Korean game that was ported to the United States by like Z-Man or something way back. It's been out of print for years and years. You could see copies up on BoardGameGeek for hundreds of dollars for a small box game. CMYK reprinted it with these nice wooden pieces. The aesthetic is very much a 60s, 70s Sesame Street kind of a vibe to it. Like it feels right at home with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah, like the 70s, the old Sesame Street for sure. Yeah. They're really almost like half psychedelic, half primary color for kids, weird art. Yeah.
It's a racing game. It's very simple. You roll a die, you move the number of spaces, but then each round you are playing a different racer that you have drafted with its own little power or rule that changes how the game works. Most of them have a function that happens during the race. Like if the centaur passes you, it kicks you back two spaces. Mm-hmm. The cheerleader can cheer people on to go the last place person to go further. And as a reward, they give themselves one additional space, that sort of a thing. And some of them have powers that take place outside of the game, like giving you points even if you don't come in first or second,
or like then
conditionally losing points depending on, you know, what your die rolls are.
Or like the person who's the character who at the before the race starts, once they see all the characters who are racing, they predict who's going to win. And if they're right, they get to come in second immediately.
Yeah.
Like neat things like that. It's really fun.
So this new version is not only readily available and reasonably priced compared to buying a used copy of the old one. I would say they play tested this one. It's a cleaner experience. It's still chaos and ridiculousness, but it's a little bit less sloppy, a little bit less one-sided sometimes. It was a fun one. Magical athlete.
It's just to point out, CMYK, it shouldn't surprise me. As you were describing spots, Tim, and about the press your luck, I was like, oh, kind of like Quacks of Quedlinburg. They made that game too. That's very cool.
And we played a couple games. Couple games.
And also, funny enough, another game they make is Monikers, which is basically Salad Bowl, something else that we played.
Yeah.
Salad Bowl is, people call it Celebrity. People call it, there's a version of it apparently called Monikers, where basically there's a name on the slip and you have to get people to guess it by, you know, using clues. Yeah. But
it's a late night staple at OmegaCon.
Yeah.
We played a couple games of that this year.
I was most excited to finally get to play a game I kickstarted that is beautiful and gorgeously produced. It's called Bloom Chasers.
Mm-hmm.
This game is you are building a tree. It's kind of like a tile placement game, except that instead of tiles, you're placing actual physical branches and buds on a tree that you're creating together. You're making this tree. On each of your turns, you place a branch, and then you place a bud according to some cards, and then every so often, everyone gets to try to put a flower down.
It's area control in the same way that like Blockus or Mainframe are.
Yep, tile placement, area control.
But it's 3D.
Yep. And it's super fun. I think it's I like to judge a game based on whether or not I want to play it immediately again after I've played it the first time from learning it. Because if someone shows me how to play a game, for example, Cartographers is like this. You know, you play the game and then you realize kind of, oh, I should have done this, so I should have done that. Okay, again, I want to play it again. That to me is a sign of a really good game. And I feel like everyone we played Bloom Chasers with, if they had time, was like, set it up again. I'm going to do it better this time, right?
And I played it with you right before you left for the weekend. I wanted to play it again because I really, that first time, I was just like, okay, I see.
Yep.
I didn't see immediately go, okay, I see how I can win this game. But I'm like, oh, I can see how I can not lose this game so dramatically next time.
Absolutely.
Everyone we were playing with was playing pretty... In all three games we played, I think everyone was playing pretty kind and gentle. That game could be played very cutthroat.
Yeah.
You could play that game very aggressively with a lot of blocking and interfering. It doesn't fit the aesthetic vibe of the game to play that way.
I would say, I mean, yeah, it definitely feels like you're creating something beautiful together, even though it's not a cooperative game
at all.
Mm-hmm. And it feels, I don't know, I do not have the cutthroat competitive spirit. I can't enjoy myself if I know that people at the table aren't having fun. And that's part of why I don't like playing with poor losers. Oh. I don't like playing games with people who are just going to pout and bitch the whole time about how they're not winning. Mm-hmm. Or who will be like, well, I guess that's it for me. I guess I can't do anything. And it's like, yeah, no shit. That's going to happen to everybody. Like, just play the game, get over it. And I feel like with Bloom Chasers, that to me is definitely part of it. When everyone's trying to make the tree better so that we can all have more fun together.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. The only complaint about that one is that the pieces are being held together by friction and gravity. And so there are a lot of times where someone would be kind of playing a game of operation and trying to maneuver a piece into place, and then there'd be some knockovers and replacement. But I think having another player put a finger on the other pieces to hold them in place really does the trick quite nicely.
Yeah, when Molly had said she might want to put a pair of tweezers in with the game, and that actually probably would work super, super well.
Yeah, I think like a big long pair of plastic tweezers, similar to what you use to play the game Operation, I think would be really helpful.
Needle nose pliers sounds really good for that game.
Sure. I think too, I really want to point out, so because I kickstarted it, I got to see all of their production challenges, of which there were many, because the game, everyone who came over to see it was like, oh, is it magnets or how is it together? And like, no, it's just really well made. And that's really astonishing when you see it being played.
Yeah.
It looks like it shouldn't be possible how it's playing out. And they did a lot of work with their molds, and the branches aren't all the same and they fit differently and they have different extensions. But when they are placed, their top parts of the branches all fit together hexagonally. And it's really a feat of game production, and specifically of plastic molding. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
If you get a chance to buy it, I recommend, just honestly, if you are a person who likes a gentle strategy game, just buy it, because it's gorgeous. It's a fucking big box, but the inside is so well made. They've got double vac trays that seal everything together. A bag for the branches, tons of plastic Ziploc bags for all your little other plasticky bitty bits that you need.
We, for as many games as we played, we did not play with enough people that we needed to bust out the 5-6 player expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also did not play with the expansion set, the birds and the bees, that's out there. That came with it. So there's a lot more to that game for us to play in the future, which is great. I like that we didn't do that and we just really explored the base game, and then in the future we can be like, oh, let's, you know, step it up a notch.
Agreed.
Spice things up. Tim, what's another game you played this weekend?
Another game that I played, not new, I think, well, it's within about the last year, Wormspan, which is Wingspan with dragons. It is literally using the Wingspan gameplay system, although it is modified.
Is it a different publisher, or is it the same publisher?
I think it's the same publisher.
Jamie.
There are a few differences. Like, you're building a cave so that your dragons are going to come perch in. So you have to like build on a space twice, once to actually expand your cave, and once to actually put your dragons on it. You also get not a random number of turns, but your turns are based on coins and other resources. So as long as you have coins and other resources, you can keep playing in a round. So Wingspan has four rounds and Wormspan also has four rounds, but the Wormspan rounds are, you have a set number of moves that you can make per round. And in Wormspan, you can earn extra resources that allow you to continue to make moves. on a pretty limited basis, but still, you can strategically, if you strategically earn yourself extra moves, it usually is going to mean that you're going to have a better chance of winning because mm-hmm. you can accrue more victory points for the end of the game. A few people that I talked to, they like feel like Wormspan is better than Wingspan. I don't know. I really like Wingspan, but it definitely was a fun variant on that game, and I was happy I played it.
I played a Stonemaier game this weekend that I have not played before. That this is the game that I played without Molly.
It was a Stonemaier game.
It was.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I played Origin Story this weekend, which was it's a trick taking game. It is. I'm told it is basically Hearts at the core of the game. Right? There's 52 cards, one from 13. Four suits, where it gets more complicated is each player has like this fold out comic book that they set in front of them that gives them a character that has a power that you power up with these little stamina tokens that you get one more of every round. So first round you get one, second round you get two, etc. With each preceding round, you also are dealt cards, which might have a piece of superhero equipment or a power or a sidekick or something like that. And you add that to your comic book as another panel to give you another power for that next round. And so each round of playing Hearts, it's getting progressively less Hearts and more these other superhero rules are mucking up the rules. I should note, there's also taking tricks isn't the only way to get points. You can, at the beginning of your turn, reveal that you are playing as a villain instead of a hero. So instead of getting 1 point per trick as a hero, you will get 4 points for taking no tricks as a villain. So if you get a really shit hand with no hearts in it, you can just say, all right, then, I guess I've lived long enough to see myself. I we were joking about it. It's like, this hand is so bad that I'm going to go rob a bank. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of the feeling, is that like this person got dealt a bad situation by the world, and now they're
Spider-Man turning, villain.
And now they're turning to villainy. Yeah,
always a Spider-Man villain, just regular nerd that got abused by somebody and then decided to turn their nerd into.
Anytime anyone's ever choosing villain at the beginning of a round, it was always like, I don't know, it had a fun meaning to it that fit with the game.
Yeah.
And then at the very end of the game, you're revealing like a superhero alter ego, and you get like a super-powered final turn.
Mm.
I played very poorly and did not feel like I was doing great, and then I had such a remarkable final round that I ended up coming in second by not a ton of points. I kind of failed my way into doing well despite not having much of a strategy or a plan at hand. I liked this so much that I bought it right away because I wanted to play it again. I looked for it on Sunday when we were hanging out trying to find another game to play. And whoever had brought it, Nursey, I think, had brought it back to his room or whatever. And so I was like, I want to play that enough where I'm willing to spend the, $30 or whatever to buy a copy. So
interesting. I can't wait to play it. The art is gorgeous.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like artists that work with Brian Michael Bendis in the aughts, mm-hmm. like Michael Gatos or the watercolor artist whose name escapes me at
her
the moment.
Her name is Clémentine Compardieu, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing poorly because it's very French.
Yeah, it's great. The art is really fantastic. I really like the design of it. It's a small box game, not terribly expensive. So,
Stonemaier makes great stuff.
I'm looking forward to playing it again.
Did you know, Tim, that there is a version of Wingspan about fish called Finspan?
No, I didn't know that, but I'm surprisingly not very interested.
We're going to make you play that game.
Hey, speaking of fish, Tim, do you want to talk about the fish
game? Oh, we played a game called Discount Salmon together, which was not a good game. I would have to go as far as to say it was you basically create a lake of fish that are not the best fish in the world, I guess is the way to put it.
They're face down fish cards that have they all have problems. The fish all have problems.
They're ugly or dry or dinky. Not a fish and toxic.
And you've got cards in your hand, and the idea is to try and solve the problem on the fish, but other people can add problems to the fish. So then you have to solve all the problems. And I think, number one, it's one of those games where it's like, if you aren't fast pulling cards out of your hand, you are at a disadvantage, and you will never be able to play this game very well.
Or at least you won't be able to win.
Yeah. And number two, it was very unclear. With if you solve the problem for the fish before somebody else places another problem on top of it, but they place a problem on top of it sort of simultaneously, does that count or does it not?
This game suffered from what a lot of little games suffer from, which is they decide that because their game is simple and small, and it's just a deck of cards, that the rule book should also be simple and small. And bare bones. And that isn't necessarily what you need to do. And I think this really illustrates something. And I think we've talked about this before when we talk about a MegaCon roundup. But it is harder to write a rule book than people realize. Mm. And the best way you can test that for yourself is to write down the instructions for how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Write them down step by step. And then give those instructions to somebody and tell them to make a sandwich by only following the instructions that you wrote down and see where they get stuck. And a lot of the time it's, did you remember to tell them to open the peanut butter jar? Did you tell them to open the bread? Did you tell them to get a knife? Did you tell them to hold the knife? You know, every little step has to be. And so if your rules are just sort of like vibes, because you know how to play the game. And so that was one of the things. I mean, we read the rules a bunch of times, the four of us, and we were like,
yeah,
I think this is how you play it. Like, it sounds terrible, but
the fun I had in that game was entirely due to the people we were playing with.
Aww.
And the the real discount salmon were the friends we made along the way. But I right off the bat was at a disadvantage for liking this one, because I don't like simultaneous play games. I don't like games where it's a mad dash to throw cards and grab cards and there's no turn element to it. I don't like real time card games.
Yeah.
I always feel like I'm going to end up clubbing someone or hurting someone's hand, or someone, the game is going to get wrecked because people are throwing cards out wild or whatever. Just not a gameplay style that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then to add on top of that, the lack of clarity from the games, I would go so far as to say that I really didn't like it at all. And I had fun.
I think that the idea of these fish have problems, and I think the art was really cute. The idea of like this ugly fish needs makeup. This stinky fish needs perfume. This dry stinky fish needs lotion and perfume. I think is a very cute idea. And I think that if I were to own this game, which I won't buy it, but if I were to somehow come into possession of it, I would make a series of house rules for a way to play this game turn-based that would be more fun. And I think that the issue is trying to make it a crazy, kooky go-for-all is can't also be a trick-taking game. A trick-taking game shouldn't also be a free-for-all. You know what I mean? Like that just... I feel like someone was like, what if Crazy Eights had fish? And that's just not really good for that.
What if Crazy Eights had fish? Yeah, Crazy I think, fish. I think another, like an example of how the instructions just don't do the job is there were two decks of cards and it's like, make a lake with one deck of cards. But even though the cards themselves have different designs on the back, the drawing looked exactly the same
in the rules. Yeah. And for what it's worth, it is my fault for not looking at the cards to see which ones were fish. I just picked what backs looked like what I figured a lake would be, which was the bubbles.
Yeah.
Because that's what looked like the lake. But it was instead the dirty water.
Still, that's just a direction thing. If you're going to show the cards and you're gonna show the backs of the cards,
yeah.
Show us what the back of the card looks like, so we got a better chance of figuring it out without looking at the face
yeah.
of the card.
Yeah.
Whoever wrote the rules didn't think about
do better.
When I showed it, yeah. when I showed the diagram to you and Hedge, and you both went, oh. Because it was like, as you can see, these simple line drawing rectangles are arranged in a lake, but it doesn't tell me which one's which.
Molly, what's the game you want to
talk
about?
Yeah, we played Mahjong again, always a great time. It is my favorite thing about playing Mahjong is counting in my head how many people come over and go, oh my God, those tiles, they're so clacky. Can I touch one? Oh my God, they're so good.
Yeah.
They have such good weight. And
there is a tactile element to Mahjong that cannot be denied.
It's true.
It's fantastic.
It's true.
Melamine tiles.
And even if you're not an asshole, some people play it and they're assholes about it. Like they're really whacking it down and making a big spectacle. We try to be a little more genteel, but to some degree, it's noisy no matter what you do. I love this game. We just got it. We got it in the interim between OmegaCons, and it's called The Gang, and it is a cooperative Texas Hold'em poker game that is also similar to the game that's called The Game, where you're trying to come up with the numbers in the right order without talking or communicating to each other who has what number, and you're trying to put the numbers in order. So there is you are each dealt your pocket, your two cards, and then there is the flop and the river, and I don't remember the name of the final card, but you have a Texas Hold'em hand, and then once all that's done, as each one is happening, so when you first get your pocket cards, everyone has to decide, and you have to kind of, without saying, be like, I think I have the best hand, or I think I have the worst hand, and kind of suss out who has... you know, one through up to six players. And then you do the flop, the first three cards and the five communal cards. And then you do that again. And then you do it again and again. And the final time you determine who is in which place, like who has the best hand, who has the worst, then you reveal. And if you're all correct, if you got it in the right order, like let's say Nick had nothing. He only had high card and Tim had a pair and I had two pair and we got it in that order without talking to each other or showing each other our cards, then we win that round and we advance through the game. And it's super fun. It is. I like games where you can't reveal information. You have to find ways to talk around what you have without, you know, and so to say like, you know, because there's communal cards for poker. So to be like, I have what everyone has because there's a pair of sixes on the, you know, on the table and I don't have anything better than that.
Sure.
So just be like, I have what everyone has and maybe a little worse, you know,
yeah.
because I also have a two and a three in my hand. Right. And that way of talking, it's similar to Bone Town, similar to The Game, you know, where you're just trying to, I don't know. I really enjoy games where the communication aspect, what's the game where you're a ghost and you're trying to get people to guess the
Mysterium.
Right card? Mysterium.
Yeah.
Dixit, Code Names, any game like that where you have to try to communicate secret information is always going to be something I love.
That's, and with The Gang, we've only been playing that really in the most vanilla way possible.
Mm-hmm.
There are some optional rules for The Gang where you can have like characters with powers. I think there's a version you can play where if you fail, you are given something that makes the game easier. And if you succeed, you are given something that makes the game harder. And at most, you're playing five rounds of poker, right?
Because
if you got two wins and two losses, your final game will decide whether or not you win or lose. So five hands of poker can go really fast depending on how good of a group you have that can communicate with one another and how confident you are. There it's a game of if you have a bunch of people in a group and none of them are terribly assertive, that could be a little bit tricky. So I think the first game with a group of people is the hardest. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of learn to gel and you're like, oh, Dave always undersells his hand.
Yeah.
Or you know, oh, Hetty's actually talking about what she has. Okay, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
She must have something good then, you know.
Similar to the game when people will be like, no, look in my fucking face. Look in my face. I go next.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Or in the case of Bonetown. What about, what other games? Tim?
Sure. I mean, real quick, just one of the reasons I didn't play a lot of games this weekend as I brought my Switch and I was playing Hades, which is Hades 2 just came out. And my son was like, he was like, I want to give you a video game for your birthday. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't play a ton of video games and I don't, you know, I'll get into them for a little while and then I'll be done. And he asked me some questions about what kind of games I like to play. And he's like, I think it's like Hades. And he gave it to me and I started playing it a couple of weeks ago and, I really liked it. And I was trying to finish I just finished the main storyline on Friday. And so I was working on the secondary storyline. And so I was like, I'd play a couple of games, then I'd go up to my room and I'd do a couple of Hades runs and then come back down. Yeah. So that was my other thing that I was doing this weekend was Hades runs.
One of the things I like about Hades is failure is necessary for progression, right? So if you just get dealt a real shit hand and you get bad powers or bad god power ups in a crap dungeon, that's okay. You can start picking things that you don't normally pick or and don't like because you need to go through and progress with those things as well, so that you can unlock more stuff. So even like a disastrous run can have some sort of incremental progress in the overall game.
Yeah, well, maybe you can give nectar to a god that you haven't had a chance to give much nectar to. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. You can progress something. Yeah,
that's cool.
It's that game has a relationship system at its core, where that can get romantic.
Hmm.
One of the romance options is an ace relationship with a Gorgon.
Oh,
who is just a floating head with snake hair, but
yeah,
she's like a keeper, a housekeeper or something in Hades and the underworld. And your relationship can progress to a point where she's like, you know, I'm not really into like, and you know, I don't want to.
Is she Aero and Ace?
I don't know. Hmm. I don't know. But you definitely like kindle a relationship optionally. Yeah. One of my favorite memes about Hades is, you know, there's that meme that's like, okay, you know, whatever, you had your fun, and now it's time for whoever to have their fun. And it's like a first thing and a second thing. So it's the cover art for Hades 1, and it says, okay, bisexuals, you've had your fun. And then it's the cover art for Hades 2, and it says, and now it's bisexuals' turn. Which is very accurate. Yeah. There's a lot of people that talk about how hot and enjoyable all the characters are in Hades, and there's a lot of variety there for everyone, depending on... no matter what you're into.
That's great. Yeah. What else? Anything else that you played that you want to talk about?
Molly and I have a kind of a standing game that we play together at OmegaCon when we're just like, let's just sit down and play a quick game. We'll play the Star Wars deck builder game, which is a two-person duel. Normally, we just play the original deck builder, but this time we brought the Clone Wars version with us that we haven't busted out yet or played.
Yeah.
So this is the inaugural run. Same game, same rules, same concept, same win conditions, but different powers, different characters, obviously, for the different time period. And that is a fun game that I'll always have fun playing. I would say that it has a unique quality about it that it is a game that Molly wins more than any other game she played, which is fun. I have fun with that too, a big time, because I'm a competitive player. You're not a super competitive player, but you routinely trounce me in the Star Wars and deck builder.
Competitive in a head to head game. I can get more competitive in a head-to-head game than I can in a game with multiple people.
Sure.
And I think a big part of that is like, you know, well, and also with you, if you and I are playing a head-to-head game, I feel more comfortable being cutthroat. I don't worry that you're not going to have fun if I win.
Oh, sure.
My number one concern always when I'm gaming is everybody enjoying themselves?
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm a people pleaser or anything. It's just more that like, I won't have as much fun if anyone isn't having a good time. Mm. So what I want is for everyone to be having fun. And that might mean me not winning. That might mean me throwing certain things or making funny, dumb mistakes so that everyone can be like, Molly. And it's like, oh, tension break. Genuinely. It's the joke that breaks tension. I'm very frustrated that the search function is not working on the Fantasy Flight Games website right now. But so never mind what I was going to say about the deck building game.
Fair. The only other game we played, Molly, was Cartographers.
Yeah. I think
we briefly mentioned that's the you draw little symbols on a map. They say the players are from 1 to 100 because you can just, there's 100 maps in a pack that you can tear off from the sheet. And
yeah.
You just need a bunch of pencils.
I finally got it to work. The Star Wars deck building game has a Mandalorian faction pack expansion that just recently was that I think just recently got announced. I don't know exactly when it comes out, but it was just announced at the beginning of September, and it is basically just it adds Mandalorians so that you can add them into your games. And instead of playing Rebel versus Empire, you can play Mandalorians versus Empire.
Nice.
Mandalorians versus Galactic Republic or whatever. So it's very exciting. I produced the first two games, and I had started producing this faction pack when I got moved off board games. This is considered a board game with our FFG designations, even though it's cards. And now I only produce Marvel LCG and Arkham LCG, but I really enjoyed producing that game. So I'm really excited now. I get to play it kind of like fresh. Like I don't even see what's going on with this game anymore. So it's very exciting. I'm really excited to buy that.
Tim, did you have anything else? Is that your whole?
That's pretty much my whole weekend. I played Cartographer with you two. Really, like, I'd heard about it. Pat had played it, I think, at Omega Spring, and told me about it. And that was another game that I need to play again.
Right?
Because I feel
you liked it.
I mean, I came in second to Nick, and I could tell I was losing to Nick, and there was basically one of the four rounds that I really borked, and I realized by right at the end of it, I'm like, I played this completely wrong. And then I played the other three rounds super, super well. And so, so it was just like, I got it now.
That's what happened to me because for like, you know, we had the one scoring card where it was every cluster of houses, six or more earns you this many points. But of course I kept accidentally touching my fucking clusters, making them all one big cluster. Mm. Instead of having three clusters of six houses, I had one giant cluster of 18, which is that's the kind of thing that like, it's mistake. I like games where you have to make mistakes before you realize how to play better.
Sure.
You know, like, and so it was really fun. I would play that again anytime.
One thing I like about Cartographers is that it seems like the expansions are mostly just buying packs of different maps. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a post-it notepad full of maps that are double-sided that you can play once
Which
on each
is
side.
Pretty inexpensive.
Yeah.
It is.
Deep.
Games.
The only other thing we did at OmegaCon is, as I said, I catch up on my comic reading. Mm-hmm. I read The Power Fantasy Volume 2 and the latest two Lore Olympuses, which if you like Hades, you should probably read Lore Olympus and give it a shot.
It's true.
And then Molly and I both read
The Nice House by the Sea,
which was so fucking good.
It's the follow-up to The Nice House by the Lake by James Tynion IV. And I think I've talked about this when I've talked about horror comics I love, but holy shit, it was good.
I read it and I handed it off to Molly and I was like,
read immediately.
Please, need to talk, please. So that's OmegaCon Fall 2025. Have you played any of those games, dear listener? Are any of them you're like, that's actually my favorite game and you were playing it wrong the whole time? How dare you talk about Discount Salmon in that way?
Yeah, maybe somebody's played Discount Salmon correctly and is like, no, you played it completely wrong. It's way more fun.
I'd love to hear if it's like actually amazing.
These fucking morons over here slapping fish, they don't know what's up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you can find us on the social medias. And if you feel like supporting this goofiness and keeping us making podcasts and going to OmegaCon and talking about our games we're playing, you can throw us a couple bucks on Patreon, where we put up episodes early. How early?
Who knows?
But you can support us there, and it really goes a long way to help us out. Otherwise, we'll be back in a couple weeks with more geeky, godless fun.
It'll be great.
Know it.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, 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 OmegaCon.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time. You can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I'm pretty sure the cat paused it.